Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined as always in studio by my good friend, my partner in radio, Barnabas Piper, and joined once a year in studio by my good friends and my partners in radio from Camp Barakal, a bunch of campers and another Camp Barakal staff member. So let's clap it up for the camp, you guys. Clap it up for the Happy Rant. We got a lot of energy in the room today, Pipe. It's just been magical up here, and like all earnestness for a minute, I do love this place so much. I love Camp Barakal. It's way up here in the North Woods of Fairview, Michigan. And we do high school camp for a week. I get to speak twice a day. This is just the greatest for me. It's good for my soul, good for my person, good for my family, and just fun to be with these people. So
Who comes to this camp? Is it like a bunch of different churches? Is it a church? Like, how does this, what kind of camp were we discussing here?
Yeah, dude, it's a bunch of different churches and they're all kind of scattered about Michigan, but we get people really from all over. Like, we have a camper from Florida. We have some from, you know, other states in the South. There's a little bit of a Tennessee connection. And the other fun part is we get college students kind of from all over to work at the camp and counsel, and just incredible high quality people. Shout out Paul Gardner, who's the camp director at Barakal, kind of my hero. He's on my Mount Rushmore of cool people that if I could choose to spend time with anybody, PG would be, he would be on there. Just a great guy, walks close to the Lord, very humble.
I feel like that's, camp directors only go one of two ways.
Mm-hmm.
They're either like Nurse Ratched or they're the coolest person ever. There's no in between with camp directors.
Well, dude, and the funny thing about coolest person ever is that PG is exceedingly cool and kind and timeless with like 0% effort. You know what I mean? Like, he's not trying to be cool. He's not trying to be like the guy that relates to you about music or movies or whatever. But he has this way of like just naturally relating to everybody, which is incredible. And there's another thing related to PG that I want to talk about. This is actually going to be a segment, but because we're in it now, I wanted to bring this up. We were at breakfast this morning and somebody had one of those like coffee contraptions that looks like a chemistry set. And you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Like the little beakers and vials. And
I mean, there's literally a version of those. It's called Chemex. And so it's not, I mean, it's like,
yeah,
they've just given in. This is just a chemistry set.
Yeah. They've totally given in. And I asked whose that was. And somebody indicated that it belonged to the camp director's wife. And I was blown away because they're older than us. And I'm pretty old. And, you know, this woman, like she makes her own yarn, like on a loom, like she makes her own fabric. She wears these like really elegant pieces of clothing that she's made. And it occurred to me, she might be the original hipster. You know what I mean? Hipsters spend like tens of thousands of dollars trying to emulate what this woman does, like naturally. She just rolls out of bed and is like this, but like it's a whole persona, like it's a whole thing for hipsters. Do you guys agree?
Sure.
Yeah, she's incredible, incredible. So I don't know that that's...
aren't hipsters just sort of a like an airbrushed version of hippies?
Well,
kind of.
That's the thing, though. I feel like there's a kind of...
Oh, and the Lemon Bar has entered the podcast, I hear.
Yeah, well, shout out to Lemon Bar.
Yeah.
Shout out my guy Dave from the kitchen. Dave he's learned something very important about me, and that it's my love language is special treatment. So Dave just like goes in back and like produces food for me on occasion and brings it out on like a special plate. And I just feel like $1 million because of him.
Do you want me to ruin it for you?
Yeah.
Okay, these were made for the counselors, and that's a leftover.
Oh, son of a gun, dude. I just found out that these were made for the counselors, and this is a leftover. But you know what? It's still special to me because Dave brought it, and it was full of love because I could see the look.
There's a fine line between leftover and saved one for you. So
exactly.
we'll go with that.
I'm going with saved one for me, like in the way that you would save something nice for a child, like for a toddler. You know, that's basically the...
I saved you the refrigerator box, like that kind of thing.
Exactly.
You know, it's like they're happy with the rubbish.
Yeah, exactly. That's me. I'm happy with the rubbish. I'm like I'm like Ruth in the third chapter of the book of Ruth, tying it into my lessons this week. But Pipe, I want to talk about, speaking of the Bible and speaking of theology, I want to talk about a little company that has lavished some special treatment on us in the past few weeks, and that's a company called Visual Theology. They make amazing products. They make amazing ironic Wheaties boxes with our images on them that they send.
I was going to say, but not for everybody, only for certain people.
Exactly. But their t-shirts have been a big hit up at camp. I've been wearing them around, and they're great. Tell us about Visual Theology, bud.
Yeah, you did. Thanks for setting that up. So Visual Theology started with, they just did a book a few years ago, and it's really cool visual representations of different parts of scripture. So you hear, I mentioned in last week's promo, the story of Gideon, where there's 300 people versus, 120,000 people, or, you hear about 10 plagues and all these different things, and they put all of these into visual representations to make these, what can be pretty easy to gloss over in scripture, kind of come alive. I was scrolling through their website this morning, actually, looking at some of the posters they do. And there was one that I was kicking myself that I didn't have about 3 weeks ago, because I was reading Exodus with my kids, and there's just this real detailed explanation of what the priests wear. Mm-hmm. And it's boring, frankly.
Yeah.
But they do this amazing poster where they they lay it all out. They kind of cross section it so you can see all the different elements. They're like, this is this, this is this, this is what this looks like. And I was like, if I could have showed my kids that, they would have been like, oh, that's really cool. But, I didn't have it at the time. So that's just an example of the kind of things they do. They have dozens of posters. They have books. They have curriculum. So stuff that can be used for a discipleship or a new believers class. Great for student ministry or college ministry as well. So listeners, if you go to visualtheology.church/happy, that's the link that where you can get our discount code. So visualtheology.church/happy, you can check out all their products and then just use the code HAPPYRENT in checkout and you'll get a 20% discount off of everything. Be sure to explore their memberships as well. They're inexpensive. So if you work at a church or if you're a teacher especially, these would be great options. You get access to all the posters. You get discounts on the books. They have discounts on any new products they come out with. That's all on the website as well. So again, visualtheology.church/happy. Use the code HAPPYRANT and get that 20% discount.
Incredible, Pipe. Great promo work as always. So Ron's not here this week. I didn't mention that at the top. Where's Ronnie? Do you know?
I think he just said he was traveling.
Yeah.
I think it's a family thing this time, not a retreat or a sabbatical or a consortium or what else does he do?
Who knows?
Conference,
America's favorite itinerant pastor, Ronnie Martin. He's around once in a while, but Pipe, what did you guys talk about last week without me on the show? I feel like I missed very few apps.
Well, we thought we would just go deep on critical race theory because we know that makes you uncomfortable. No, that's not true. We did a Man of the Cloth episode and just talked about, because I'm kind of new to pastoral ministry and Ronnie's been in it a little longer and we come into it from kind of unique backgrounds. And so just kind of talking about what have we learned, what's been a surprise, what was a surprise for him, those kinds of things. So just pastoral ministry in a happy rant way.
Dude, I love it. I love it. Piper, I want to introduce something in somebody that we never have guests on the program. But because I'm here at camp, we have a really special opportunity. I have Aaron Crandall with me. Aaron wears many hats here at camp, including literal hats. She wears what she calls her business bonnet. And that's there's kind of an out west theme this week at camp. So I've seen Erin wearing like Amish dresses and bonnets, meaning that she looks like
pioneer women.
Yeah, pioneer women. Yeah. She looks like 2/3 of the women in our church.
She looks like the cover of all of Ronnie Martin's favorite books.
Absolutely. Yeah. She could be on the cover of one of Ron's favorite novels. But anyway, we were having breakfast with Erin this morning and she laid an unbelievable theory on us related to coffee. And kind of the culture of coffee and the culture of just some other things that we're dealing with in this context in 2021. So I'm going to introduce Erin. She is from Muncie, Indiana, God's country. Shout out Muncie. So we know that she is a great person. Alrighty. So Erin, welcome to the program. And I'm going to ask you, if you would, to just kind of introduce the idea that you introduced to me this morning. And then I want to get Pipe's feedback on it.
Okay. Yeah. So we were talking about caffeine in general. And I mentioned that I don't actually drink any caffeine. I stopped drinking caffeine a couple years ago when I finally figured out why I was having anxiety issues. So I started having a lot of anxiety issues shortly after we got married. Mm-hmm. And throughout my 11 years of marriage and different pregnancies, I started like thinking through like, when was my anxiety the worst? When was it not the worst? I totally blamed like hormones and birth control. And it all came clear to me that I started drinking a lot of coffee when I got married, and I stopped drinking it when I was pregnant, and I would pick it back up again. And my anxiety is always so much worse and almost uncontrollable when I'm drinking a lot of caffeine. And so I looked into it and I stopped drinking caffeine altogether, and almost immediately my anxiety got better. And so the more I read about caffeine and how it affects anxiety, and the more I thought about the culture that our young people are living in right now, that seems to be just so much more anxiety and depression issues than it used to be. Now, I don't think it's all caffeine. I'm also not a doctor or a scientist, but I've learned recently you don't have to be either of those things to have strong opinions.
That's it. And we're neither of those things too.
Yeah. Or to be a medical expert. You can be a medical expert with none of that.
I can have some pretty strong theories and opinions and force them onto people pretty easily.
So you tied it in. And this is what I thought was brilliant about this morning.
Oh, the Friends thing.
Yeah, you tied it into the show Friends, which introduced coffee and narcissism.
Yeah, so like in the 90s, I'm in high school that time, and the Friends show is on. And prior to that, no one is going to coffee shops and like hanging out all day drinking coffee. And there's not coffee shops on college campuses, and like coffee shops like aren't really a thing until Friends comes along and makes it this like super cultural thing. And then Wi-Fi too, allowing people to work at coffee shops and like study at coffee shops and spend their whole day just drinking coffee after coffee, and kids drinking coffee at a young age. I didn't drink coffee until I was an adult. Yeah. And it was because I decided as a grown-up, I should either learn to drink coffee or learn to drink beer. And I decided coffee was the better option.
And I think, that's debatable.
I was going to say, there's some question. Also, it's not an either or.
For me. So we started talking about like, what if we had our high schoolers hanging out at pop shops all day?
Yeah.
Just drinking caffeinated pop.
What if the arbitrary thing was pop or soda?
For our Southern listeners, pop is what you call Coke. Oh. For our Eastern listeners, that's what you call soda, step outside the region.
So if you're going to make a store out of it, it has to be called a pop shop.
So you'd have some little hipster barista, but instead of pulling like a latte, she would be like pulling a Diet Pepsi and writing your name on the can. Right. And
I can't imagine.
Sounds like a soda fountain to me.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
I guess that was a thing that existed.
Yeah. that's already
we thought we were so clever this morning.
But I'm thinking like, I can't imagine sending like a young person to a pop shop to like just drink sugary caffeinated beverages all day. But yet that's what we do as a culture. We sit and drink sugary caffeinated coffee all day.
And then we wonder why we're jittery and on edge all the time.
Yeah. And is it coincidental that anxiety and depression have increased so dramatically in the last two centuries? No. What is it? A decade.
decades. 2 centuries, 200 years of hipster coffee shops.
It's been a long week.
Feels like it.
Yeah, we're still like kind of kicking the tires on this theory.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on it? Do you think it has legs? Yes or no?
Well, I'm of very mixed feelings right now. So we're going to start with the feelings and then we'll get into the facts because reactions are more fun. I'm here for anything that blames Friends for bad stuff. So
yes, dude.
I'm down with all of that.
Let's go.
I am strongly in defense of drinking coffee, though. Only because it doesn't affect me that way. So clearly, if it has no negative effects on me, it should be fine for everybody, right? Like, it doesn't make me anxious. Everybody should be fine. Just legalize what's good for me.
When I read about caffeine, it did clearly say if you're prone to anxiety, it will amp it up.
Yeah.
So being prone to it, it does not cure my anxiety. In fact, COVID made me go on anxiety meds, even with not drinking caffeine. So I'm definitely prone to it, but the caffeine really amped it up.
Interesting. So, Piper, I have a kind of a like ancillary theory to this, and I want to hear both of you on it since you're both not doctors and not even close in any way. My theory about hipsters has long been these people get up in the morning, they immediately start pounding like rich dark coffees. At 5:01 p.m., they switch to like hoppy IPAs. I think they're just massively dehydrated and that their organs are going to crumble like an old scone. And I wonder if that has something to do with the anxiety as well. Your thoughts?
Well, there's become a culture of like the sustainable water drinking. So like every hipster has like a Camelback or a Nalgene or a Clean Canteen or a Hydro Flask. Like there's a billion high-end water bottle companies now. So I feel like they might be counteracting it well. You know, what I want to know is how they get any work done. Because if I drink as much as they do of either coffee or hoppy beer while consuming all that water, I would be peeing every 45 minutes. And so that seems like a very disrupted workflow.
Yeah. Maybe what hipsters really love is peeing. I don't know.
And being self-employed.
That's true. Quote unquote. That's right.
You can work from anywhere. Why not the bathroom?
Absolutely, dude.
I do think that there's a lot of merit in that theory because, you know, it's funny because people will pay so much attention to what they put in their body. You know, there's keto diet and Whole 30. I mean, there's just all these diets where people are like treating their bodies as if it's, you know, it's a whole chemistry kind of experiment. But what they always say is, but you can drink black coffee with it. Like there's just this acceptable drug that we pay no attention to. And
hey, you can do all the cocaine you want.
That's right. Know? Yeah. All the uppers you want. Just snort them, smoke them, shoot them, whatever. Exactly. But I don't think anything of it because I drink about somewhere between half a pot to 2/3 of a pot of coffee a day. And it's just my norm. And I'm kind of terrified what would happen if I stopped. Like, I don't know if I would either get superpowers or I would become like the Hulk. I don't know. I'd start killing people. Or I would just have a headache. I'm not sure. So it is odd that coffee does not fall into the, like, your body is a temple thing for most people, even though they're religious about like how much, you know, lean protein they eat and whatever else.
Dude, that's so true. That's so true. And so funny. Aaron, I want to thank you for coming on the program.
Yeah, no problem.
You certainly don't have to leave the studio now, but if you have work you have to do,
but
you
I have
can
to be
go.
Quiet.
But you don't have to be quiet either. I mean, you're a guest. You're like once a guest, always a guest in terms of.
Yeah, if you've got insights or funny comments, please throw them in the podcast.
Absolutely. So I'll ask both of you this question then. And this harkens back to something we talked about like a couple of episodes in a row. I listened to 10 minutes of the Drisky doc on the way up. My question to you is twofold. Like, how many episodes are there now? And are you guys still like listening to it?
I think there's four out now and they come out once a week. So it's not, you know, it's not like a scramble to keep up with it. If you, you know, if you're a regular podcast listener. Yeah. I'm keeping up with it because I've really liked how they've kind of examined it from a bunch of different directions. They're interviewing people who were there and it's absolutely not a, like just a hit piece. If it was a hit piece, I would have given it like 8 minutes max and been like, oh, these people just hate Mark Driscoll. This
Dude,
is more of a like
10 minutes and it felt like a hit piece to me. Does it get, it gets less hit piecey.
I think if you, so the last episode I listened to at the time of our recording was talking about like the moving of the spirit to spontaneous baptisms. And they have one of their former worship leaders and how his daughter came up. So he steps away from the microphone to baptize her and just the most like normal sounding guy. Like none of this is over kind of over dramatized as much as just saying like amazing things were happening.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then another guy who was talking about how like Mark pulled him out of kind of an aimless life of never going to make it as a musician to do meaningful ministry and convinced him to get married to the woman who's now has, you know, he's married to and has kids. And so they shine the light on a lot of good stuff that happened.
Yeah.
Even as there's all this kind of ugliness too. And so, yeah, it really is. I've appreciated the kind of two sides of the coin aspect of the storytelling, because that's how I feel about Mark very distinctly is like, I wouldn't recommend him to anybody. Uh-huh. But I can't help but acknowledge a significant amount of good that happened in my life because of things that he wrote and said.
Yeah. You
know? And it's a both and.
Yeah, that's good, man. And that's true. And I think, listening to that first 10 minutes, they played a few clips of like early Drisky preaching. And I was like, oh, I'd forgotten how awesome this guy was, actually. Like I'd forgotten how insightful and funny and interesting and challenging and all those things that he could be.
And one of a kind. Nobody preached like that.
Yeah, one of a kind, exactly. And I think for me, and this isn't some like good person flex at all, but I think it just made me like I didn't want to think about his unraveling. You know what I mean? And there are all these external factors for it. Like you shouldn't put somebody in charge of a church who's never been a member of a church, and you shouldn't put somebody in charge of all this stuff at age 26 when they're not ready for it. And like, I get all that. And I guess I don't have to be convinced of all of it. But it made me feel, I just felt sad, I guess, you know, to know like the trajectory of it. And, you know, I didn't want to keep listening, but the thing is a phenomenon, man. Like you literally can't go anywhere in like Christendom without people talking about the Drisky doc. So it's done really well.
I think the listeners are much more polarized than the podcast itself, because you have people who come at it who were like, they got saved because of Mark Driscoll's ministry. And then there's other people who just, they hate him. They just hate him with all their hearts because of his general jackassery and, you know, and all of the cost of that. And then there's so many people in the middle who are like, I don't know how to feel about this guy because he did a ton of good and he did a ton of bad. And what do you do with that kind of person? And it's not like he, you know, he didn't do anything criminal. And, you know, and that's, it's one thing if somebody's like, oh, he embezzled $17 million. You're like, well, he's in jail, you know, or if somebody's a sexual deviant or whatever, he was just a jerk, like the biggest kind of jerk.
Well, and that, it's so interesting that you say that, because that's like a different category even than like heretic, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's one thing if somebody's spreading false teaching and, you know, you push back or you draw lines or whatever. But yeah, I mean, it's basically like, this is a guy that a whole bunch of people liked, and this is a guy that a whole bunch of other people really didn't like. And I don't know. I don't know what to do with it. Maybe my struggle with it is that, like, it's just a new category. You know what I mean?
Well, and yeah, and I think we're... If America has proven anything, it's that we don't hold competing thoughts in our mind very well. Like we don't sort things. We just want to be able to throw like everything into one basket or another. It's good or it's bad. It's in or it's out. It's true or it's false.
Yeah.
And almost nothing is that neat and tidy. And so like, and especially not people, you know, almost no person is 100%, you know, worthy of our respect. They're like mostly worthy of our respect, and we generally respect them, but we also know they're quite capable of being a failure. And then there's people who are, you know, it's pretty rare for somebody to be so colossally successful kind of significant, and then so colossally terrible.
Yeah.
And, you know, and they almost overlapped.
Yeah. Do you think anybody, if given what he was given at such a young age, and I think about people like your dad and like Tim Keller, who really... they came into their quote unquote success later in life. They really did. I mean, your dad at 26 wasn't like a worldwide phenomenon and a conference speaker and published and all this stuff. I wonder if you gave anybody what Drisky got at 26, if it would wreck them.
Yeah. I especially in ministry where it's a, you know, like if you give somebody massive business success at 26, they might be all right. You know, that's a question of money or fame. Like there's 26 year old athletes who manage it well. But ministry is a different thing, because when you start mixing fame and fortune with an occupation that should be defined by not like by humility.
Yeah.
What do you do? Like it has to be a daily waking up and going, any fame and fortune that I have don't matter.
Yeah.
You know, they don't matter. And so, yeah, somebody like Tim Keller and my dad, like they didn't get, my dad was probably, what would he have been? Probably close to 50 when he kind of became colossally well known in the evangelical world. He was in his 40s when he like, when his star was on the rise. And I mean, I think about my, you know, I'm pushing 40 and I think about that and I go, 10, 12 years ago, I would have been
an
absolute disaster.
Yeah, for sure.
And at this point, it would make me very nervous if I, you know, if my name became anything.
Yeah, absolutely. Aaron has a comment.
I raised my hand.
Yeah.
Like any good student.
Absolutely.
I think like seeing someone in a Christian leadership position with fame and money aside, but fame any Christian is going to be attacked by Satan and be tempted to fall. But I think he's going to go hard after those, because what better person to attack and watch crumble than someone that everyone who's a non-believer sees it too. The believers start to question, the non-believers point and laugh. I mean, that's like the perfect person. Mm-hmm. So I think any believer going into ministry, going into leadership, going into some sort of power has to be so on guard for what attacks he or she is going to receive, because
yeah,
if I was the enemy, that's who I'm going after.
It's such a great point. And I think to that, you know, just the way our culture is now and the way we live our lives and how plugged in we are electronically. I mean, I think we roll out of bed promoting is the last thing we do before our heads hit the pillow at night. And we do a lot of promoting in between. So I think just the way we live our lives is pretty fundamentally at odds with humility. And so sometimes the humility comes at a steeper, harsher, kind of more jagged cost than it used to. I don't know. I don't know, Pipe, if you think, especially in the realm of pastoral ministry, like how do we reclaim humility and what kind of changes do we need to make to our lifestyles to make that a thing that's like tenable?
Well, a couple thoughts. I'll answer that question. 1 second. I thought Aaron's comment was so spot on in terms of the way that the devil wants nothing more than to fracture the church, just anything he can do to discredit what Christ is doing. And if he can do it through a nuclear explosion, like a leader blowing up, that's great, because the fallout is enormous. Mm-hmm. But if he can't do it that way, so like, I don't know if you guys are aware, because you've been enjoying your time at camp, there's a whole thing that kind of came up this week with David Platt, where, Platt hasn't done anything wrong that I'm aware of, but a small group of members in his church spread basically a campaign of lies to vote down some elders that were proposed and essentially trying to split the church. That's the long and the short of it. And like, and so there's a, you can find it on YouTube. There's a, like a business meeting that they had, and he addresses it. So Satan couldn't get at him for ego or for sexual sin or for whatever. And thank God for that. And instead he uses, you know, malicious, slanderous behavior. He just doesn't quit. He's always gunning for it. And so, yeah, like if you can get Driscoll, if you can get James McDonald, you know, he Bobby does that.
And yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And if not, he's going to use this. Yeah. What did Aaron say?
Ravi Zacharias.
Yeah. Zacharias. I mean, yeah, sadly we could probably just play ping pong with names for the next 10 minutes, but, and if not, it's the snake in the grass, you know, just for the innocent guy. Your question was, what do we need to change?
Yeah. I think I'll add to that, like just something as you were speaking that came to mind, just from the perspective of a parishioner, just a guy in the pew, like pray for your pastors, you know, like diligent daily prayer for the people who are leading our churches. I mean, I think that's something we've been convicted to do over the last couple of years. And, it's scary out there for them. You know, there are a lot of people roaming about seeking to devour. But yeah, on the humility part, Pipe, what are your thoughts?
We were just talking about this at a meeting, an elders meeting earlier this week at church, and the pastor who was leading it brought up the text that says, "Shepherd the flock of God who is among you." That phrase "among you" is so significant, because I think a huge part of where we go wrong in ministry, I include myself in this number as it's a temptation, is to pour our energies into anywhere beyond the scope of ministry that God has handed us. The internet has completely broken our ability to see our limitations.
What a great point.
I think it was Michael Ware tweeted the other day. He said, "We're not designed to be aware of this much information and anxiety in the world. Like our brains are not designed to handle this." And so, you know, on the one hand, we're intaking so much info. And on the other hand, we have reached to people we have no business having reached to. You know, and then there's such a titillating aspect of like people reaching out and saying, you know, I get hit up on social media where people ask me questions they ought to be asking their pastor.
Sure.
And I'm that's generally my response is like, do you have a church? You should talk to your pastor about this. And they're kind of like, well, he's not any good. I'm like, well, I'm sorry, but you know, it's still, I'm not the pastor of the internet and neither is, you know, David Platt or whoever. And, and so I think that among you aspect, you know, if you're at a church of 300 people, you got 300 people to shepherd. If you're at a church of 1,000 people, you got 1,000 people and you probably need a lot of help because that's too many people for a pastor. And, and I think that's an aspect. I mean, but real frankly, I think there's just the thing that I see in guys like my dad and, you know, my dad and I have plenty of differences, but there are so many aspects of his life that I look at and I go, well, I would like to emulate that. And one of them is he just has never thought more highly of himself than he ought, period. I mean, I'm sure he has in moments, but he just wakes up in the morning and through spiritual growth, maturity, discipline over time has a recognition of I'm nothing without the grace of God. Mm. When if you start there and he, you know, it just flies in the face of ego. It flies in the face of self-promotion. It flies in the face of kind of the self-helpy mindset of like, I am enough for me kind of thing. Like it just turns the eyes to Christ and you're like, well, I'm not anything. I can't accomplish anything. I can't save anyone. I can't write a word that helps anybody. No good comes from me aside from the grace of God. So and I think a lot of pastors just fall into the trap of thinking they can do anything.
Mm.
And the moment they do, they're kind of, they've just sort of punted effectiveness.
Yeah, man, that's so good. And there's so much good in that. And it's sort of, it flies in the face of what our culture tells us, which is you can do anything. You should be doing everything. There's this really great tension, I think, in the life of the believer between we really need to be diligent and active in the stuff that God's called us to do, while at the same time, daily, hourly, minutely, like realizing how dependent we are on him. And I think the people that do that well are the people that I want to learn from. But they're few and far between, you know, they're not a lot of them. And I think the culture that we're in now and the resources that we have now, they don't do those people any favors. So
yeah,
easier said than done.
I was just thinking about, you know, when we were just reviewing the manuscript for our book, teaser listeners, we submitted our manuscript. It's with the publisher now. So that's exciting.
But soon to be changed drastically.
Yes, soon to be sent back with all sorts of red ink on it, I'm sure. But in there, one of the portions I'm certain they won't change is when you wrote about Ephesians 2 in one of the chapters. I think it was the chapter on deconstructing faith. Yeah. But you know, Ephesians 2 is a great example of this where it says, you know, it is by grace you've been saved through faith, and this is not of yourselves. It's a gift of God. So, I mean, it just lays it out like, you didn't do this. God did this. It's a gift. But then verse 10 in Ephesians 2 said that we have been, prepared for the good works that God has set out before us. Basically, he's prepared good works for us to walk in. And so we don't save ourselves, but there are absolutely things that we put our hand to and do them with all of our might, you know, because I think it's also a temptation of pastors to be lazy, you know, to basically be like, I'm just on call. God's doing the work. Mm-hmm. And you know, so there's workaholic pastors who are doing too much in their own strength. There's lazy pastors who are not doing enough. And then most of us fall somewhere in the middle and probably pendulum swing a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a good word, man. So true. Pipe, we've got just a couple of minutes left before I have to run to my next camp thing. Let's talk about another cultural phenomenon.
All right.
That is just great. Without qualification, and it's the show Cheers, which you're now watching with your lady. And nothing has made me happier via text lately than learning this from
you.
Although we have some pipe. 1 minute, let's do 30 seconds on this. We have dudes at our camp, like high school dudes, who are like unironically wearing mullets. And they look like 1980s dirtbags.
No, they look glorious.
They look kind of glorious, kind of dirtbag.
You got to understand that 1980s dirtbag is a term of honor and affection coming from Ted. Like,
in my economy.
Okay. Yeah, that's, absolutely. That's a good thing.
I love it so much. And I grew up in the 80s and 90s, and I feel like I should hate it, but I love it.
Yeah, and one of them even pairs it with like a really scummy mustache, and they're pulling it off. It works really
when
well.
When they graduate,
shout out those guys.
When they graduate, they have to stop.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, there's a time and a place.
Right,
but
now, man.
You know,
I have mixed feelings about the matching mustache. Mustaches in general, I'm very uncomfortable with.
It's tough.
That is fair. Mustaches are disgusting.
Yeah.
But a mustache with a mullet on a high schooler, I say go for it.
There's a lot of confidence there that I like. And I even wonder, and I want to hear you speak to this as a former Wheaton College student. Aaron and I were Taylor University students. Woo-hoo. How would the mullet and mustache play at Wheaton? Because I'm thinking this through, going, what if these guys took that to Taylor?
It would play at Taylor.
You think it would play?
Oh, it
for sure.
Oh, it would absolutely work at Wheaton these days. Like, Wheaton has all, you know, there's plenty of, like, you know, your J. Crew kids or whatever there, but there's always a strong cohort of kind of the counterculture, if you will. So, like, some gothy looking kids or some, which is like my freshman year, the guy who was in the dorm room next to me was a philosophy major who had like strong goth skater vibe about him. So, like,
super
dark haired.
Did it work for him? Was he able to pull girls with that persona?
Yes. Nobody else liked him, however. And I don't know how, and I don't know how long they could tolerate him either. He was a difficult person.
That's one of those personas that, like, dudes hate it, but a certain kind of girl is drawn to it.
Yeah.
I can see it.
You know, and then there was the crowd who skated on longboards. There's, you know, there's like this kind of the hippie granola crunchy, you know, that crowd. So the mullet mustache thing, and it's always going to be by the guys who are kind of, they have an outsized charming personality anyway.
Yeah.
And so, like, if they were also good looking, you would want to fight them. But because they're doing this sort of self-sabotage in a humorous way, it makes you like them more. I think it would work really well.
Dude, and it does work really well. That's so true. Yeah. That's the psychology behind it. We have a comment from a camper. Yeah, go.
Something else I've noticed is really odd to see on people. I got a friend who's 14 and he's already growing this little beard.
Yeah.
You know, those high school freshman beards that just look like a caterpillar exploded on their face.
Yeah.
It's like mold growing on his face.
Exactly. That's not new. I mean, that's been around since the beginning of time, that phenomenon.
He needs to get a mullet.
He needs to get a mullet to go with it. Oh, I think that's the prescription.
You know, no, I think he needs a grown up to sit down and go, has anyone taught you how to shave yet? Like, do you need me to get you a razor?
So often we go back to where the dads, but
yeah.
Maddie, what's up, baby? Welcome to the program.
Dude, there was a camper last week, an Eastside camper,
okay,
who looks older than all of these high school kids.
Okay.
Looks older than all of
the
staff.
So middle school kid. Yeah.
Looked older than all the staff.
Yeah.
Looked older than like.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Like, he looked like he was 35.
My question to you, Maddie, as a counselor, is life easier or harder for that kid? Because when I was like a middle schooler and I was tiny and weaselly and nervous, like, I looked at the early maturing guy and I was just like, oh my gosh, the world is his oyster, you know?
I was scared of him.
Yeah, sure. As a counselor.
I'm older than him.
I get it, man. I totally get it. Dude, this is my friend Matt. He's a counselor here. Maddie and I did like a magical 5 minutes this morning on what it's like to go to basketball camp in Grand Rapids, Michigan, which is an exercise in being like having the mid-range jumper like still shoved down your throat by some like Tyler Van Vandersma type guy with big
ankles. By some 7'4" Dutch guy.
Right.
I'm glad that you started his last name as Vander.
Vandersma. Yeah. Like, we're going to shoot 15-footers, you guys. I don't care if the whole basketball world is against this.
He's being recruited by Hope College in seventh grade.
Yeah. Exactly, man. Exactly.
Dude, I played college basketball at a small school in Grand Rapids, but I went to basketball camps for Hope and Calvin, both of them. You just go there, and it's just like,
it's middies. Middies all day long.
Dude, middies. Yeah. Big 6'6" Dutch dudes just
shooting middies.
Launching high post work.
I love it, man. I would fit in at that camp. I might be too old to go to the camp, but I bet I could go there. I bet I could get 12 points a night just on my mid-range, my little baby hook, you know?
I could be the speaker at the camp.
I could be the speaker. That's right. That would be amazing.
But don't basketball camps require that you do some sort of magic or like
dribbling tricks or whatever?
Like spin like 10 balls at the same time?
Yeah.
Yeah, or like you have to beat one of the camp, like you challenge a camper to horse or something like that.
Yeah.
Also, they would require that you be any good at basketball. And I think that might be the deal breaker for me. Yeah, I'd be kicked out immediately for sure. Pipe, we got to go. But give me like 1 minute on Cheers. Is your lady still liking it? And like, where are you guys at? Like, what episode, what season?
Oh yeah. I don't know if she's watched all the seasons before, but she's seen more of it than I have.
Nice.
I just have never watched it ever. Like, cause it was on TV when I was, you know, like six. So, a little young. And so just came around to it. And I just kind of assumed it would be really hokey. Yeah. And, it absolutely just stomps on any sitcom that has come out in the last, you know, 10 years.
Amen.
It's so funny. And every character works. And we're 2 seasons in. So we haven't even been introduced to all the characters. Like Frasier's not there yet, anything like that.
Yep.
But they all work. And Norm and Coach hold it down as my absolute favorites for now.
Shout out Coach Ernie Pantuso. Legend.
Yeah. Yeah, like even the stuff that's like inappropriate and I'm sure would have been very scandalous in 1984 is kind of like tastefully scandalous now. Like there's nothing in there that's grotesque, and it's just a brilliantly written show.
It's kind of charming and quaint.
Yeah.
Well, it makes me really happy that you guys are watching and enjoying, and we'll keep doing Cheers check-ins as you guys meander through. But speaking of media that the whole world needs to know about, Pipe, talk about Dwell Bible, our other sponsor.
Oh, I would love to talk about Dwell Bible, our other sponsor. Listeners, Dwell is an audio Bible app. If you go to dwellapp.io/happyrant, dwellapp.io/happyrant, you can check it out and see their discounts for our listeners. We've talked about them for a long time, but they have they're continually evolving, adding new Bible versions, new narrators, new musical backgrounds, new listening plans, all sorts of new features. Two of the features that they've added in the last few months that are really cool, they have a sleep feature. So you can actually set a timer on it. You can fall asleep or put your kids to sleep listening to scripture. And then they have a read-along feature. So in the app, if you're somebody who really benefits from the reading and that helps it, you know, stick in your mind better, you can do that as well. Just in general, an audio Bible is a great way to get scripture into the parts of your life where it, you know, it's tough. If you're in the car a lot, if you have small children, when you're at the gym, those kinds of things where you can't really read easily. So right now they're offering a 33% discount for our listeners off of their lifetime subscription. It's about a $50 savings or a 10% discount off the annual subscription. So again, it's dwellapp.io/happyrant. Check them out today and be sure to subscribe. And I think you can actually buy it as a gift for other people. So if that's something that somebody else in your life would benefit from, you can do it that way as well.
Incredible. Barakel Campers, clap it up for Pipe for that promo work. He's a pro. He's a pro's pro, doggone it. And I want to thank you guys for coming by, man, and for just infusing new life into this program this week. Aaron Crandall, maybe the first guest we've ever had in the history of the program in 7 or 8 years, I know. Kind of a huge deal for you to be here.
We set the bar
studio.
Very high.
We have. I mean, we've set the bar really high.
Really excellent work.
Yeah, we need to wait another 7 or 8 years before we bring on another
guest.
Kind of
like my dentist appointments.
It's exactly 7 or 8 years, whether you need them or not.
Yeah.
You know, that's our approach to guests on the program. But Piper, we've done what we always do on the show, and that we've wandered to and fro throughout a few topics. Original hipsters, not original sin, original hipsters, coffee and anxiety. Coffee and your organs shriveling up and crumbling like an old scone.
Yeah.
And until next time.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
Hey everybody, I'm Dale.
And I'm Tamara.
We're hosts of the Kynos Project podcast,
where we help you tackle ancient Christian truths in everyday settings.
To learn more and subscribe, go to lifeaudio.com.